I love creating value for the listeners. If you are ready to become a real estate investor, I've created a real estate investing blueprint just for you. It's an easy plan to help you on your journey getting your first property. Once you've downloaded the blueprint, you'll become a member of the Real Estate Investing Tribe and get even more resources delivered to your inbox. Like my newsletter, Five Things Friday. The Five Things Friday newsletter is serving everything real estate investing. You get advice, strategies, free downloads, giveaways, and so much more. And it's all for free. So go ahead, download the blueprint now while you listen to this episode. The link is in the show notes.
You're listening to Lighting Up Real Estate with your host, Kendall Lockett.
Episode 46, starting with $25,000 and growing to $3.5 million. How to build and manage a massive real estate portfolio. As always, the goal of this show is to shine a light on people, strategies, systems, goals, and ideas to help grow your real estate investing business. So how do you start with $25,000 and grow it into 130 properties and counting? Justin Cortori is here on the show and he is ready to tell it all. We discuss the importance of relationships, exit strategies, private lending, property management, and how he's even found a new market in real estate that no one in his area is touching. This is a good one. Let's get started.
Excellent.
Justin, welcome to Lighting Up Real Estate.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on.
I am excited to have you on because you have a very, very, very intriguing portfolio, and how you got your portfolio is nothing short of amazing. So I had to get you on the podcast so you can definitely share your story of how you have this portfolio and you started only with $25,000.
Yes. Yep. Yep. Yeah. So I don't even know how I got that $25,000, to be honest with you.
Cause you have five kids.
My wife and I always joke about.
Yeah.
So we have five kids. Yep. Been married for 20 years and have five kids. And I bought our first property when our oldest daughter was just 6 months old. So I bought our first one in December of 2014.
Okay.
And Mary, our youngest, was only 6 months old. So just kind of dug my heels in and just started grunting at it. So, but I don't know how we had that kind of money. You know, we bought our current house about 10 years ago. And, you know, these big ticket items, I mean, we were always broke. We didn't have any money. You know what I mean? So, you know, growing up and I was working two jobs and then, you know, we were told we were going to have twins. So that was a curve wrecker for us. So we had no idea how that was going to happen. We have a small family here in town, so we didn't really have a lot of support. So it was just us. And I mean, and we were struggling. Like we had those conversations about, you know, do we get cheese on our Whopper Jr. sandwiches? Like that, those were real conversations. So when, you know, we lived in trailers and just never, you know, ran awful cars that broke all the time and fixing lawnmowers. And I mean, it was just awful. So finally I was able to get a good corporate job just by networking and, you know, just simple people skills. Basically I was working two jobs, found out we were going to have twins. And I said, well, I can't make 25 grand working two jobs the rest of my life. So I put my notice in and as soon as I did, I called a couple of vendors that I worked with and told them that I was leaving. And within a day, all of them came back and said, hey, you'd be a great employee at this guy's business. So within like 3 days, this guy got four recommendations for me, called him up. And I remember right where I was pacing back and forth on my front porch of my trailer and ended up talking, and come to find out he was from a small town that my mother-in-law is from. We knew the same bakeries and same bars and same streets. And we kind of built some rapport real quick. And he goes, well, why don't you come down tomorrow and I'll show you around the place. Never saw a resume, never saw an application. So went and got my suit out of the closet and dusted it off and went down there. And here he was in a pair of, stretched out polo and a pair of jeans and some Pumas. And I was like, oh my gosh, here we go. And he just brought me right in. And I was there for just about 15 years. And I just left there back in March. So it was a great corporate job, got me all the way through. But, you know, through there, we had four kids and, you know, just, you know, financed houses. And I don't even know how the heck we did it. Just big tax returns from all the kids is all I can think about. And a little bit of frugal living, too. So, but
so did you start real estate investing when you were working with that company? Or was it after?
Yeah. This was... No. So I bought our first one December of 2014, and I just left my corporate job this past March. So it was a little like 6.5 years from start to finish.
Okay, so then you started real estate investing part-time.
Part-time, but I pretty much right away went full engaged, and it had all of my attention. It was, I have a chapter of my life that I call Lowe's Opens at 6 a.m., right? And I live like in a suburb area and I worked in downtown, and everything that I bought was between where I worked and where I lived in this one town. I don't own anything outside of this one little town. So everything I owned was 5 minutes from one another. So it was easy for me to manage. It was easy for my team to manage. It was just, that lifestyle design, I knew that I didn't have time with all the kids, with the family, and the work, and everything else, that I needed to have somewhat of as manageable of an operation as I possibly can.
Right.
So one thing I didn't want to do is, you know, when I came home at night, I didn't want to own stuff around where I lived out in the suburbs, because I didn't want to have to come home, unwind, and say, okay, well, now I got to go back out and deal with these other properties. Like my wife will always say, she goes, you know, she doesn't know how the heck I did all this either. And she'll say, he always had a good work-life balance. You know, when I left at 6 a.m. and when I got home at 5, 6 o'clock, I was done. You know, I'd work a couple hours on a Saturday. I'd work, you know, whatever, 6, 7 o'clock till noon. My dad would always come over Saturday for lunch, and that was it. And I didn't work Sundays. And that gave me the fulfillment enough in my life to know, well, I threw everything I possibly could at this business and at this project to get started. So that's, and if it didn't get done, I just push it off until the next day, and that was that.
Okay, so let's start with the first property that you got.
Okay.
Okay, what made you want to get into real estate investing?
So I've always been entrepreneurial. When I was a punk kid, probably 12, 13, my dad asked me to go paint the back fence. It was pretty small, and he was going to give me $15. And so... being the entrepreneur, I was friends with the paper boy, and I told him I'd pay him $10. So a couple of days later, my dad came home and saw this other kid painting a fence, and I got yelled at and had to finish it. So, but I still got paid, and I paid him, and you know, the stories. And it's, but I have a ton of stories like that of just being creative with money, and you know, just being a punk kid, and you know, all the stuff that you do through high school. So I've always been aware of opportunities, and when we moved to Philadelphia. We lived next door to a small business owner, and he made magnets for pizza shops and sports cards, you know, sports, clubs and stuff. And he gave me, we would always talk business, and he gave me Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I was never a big reader. And I, you know, when he gave it to me, I was like, oh man, I'm just going to give this back to you in a couple of weeks and tell you I read it. And you know, that's that. Well, you know, that's not what happened. I picked it up one day and got two pages in, and I was glued, read the whole thing. And it completely changed my outlook and my whole mind when it came to businesses. So fast forward, you know, with all the kids and working, and like, I never had the opportunity, right? But I was always prepared, and I was always learning, and I kept reading all the books, all the real estate books. And it wasn't until we moved back into where I'm from here in Northwest Pennsylvania that I met the janitor at where my dad works. And he's an old Vietnam vet, and he's got a ton of real estate rental properties. And I would always just like ask him for war stories and broken toilet stories and tenant stories. And long story short, one of our friends ended up buying a house. And one night my wife said, hey, let's go look at what our friends bought on Zillow. So we pulled it up on Zillow. And I immediately noticed like three blocks away a house that was like at the quarter of the price of what they bought. So I looked at it. I'm like, wow, that would be a pretty good deal, I guess. Like this wasn't even on our radar. Like,
wow.
Rental properties, real estate investing, like that was just so abstract for us. But for whatever reason, I saw it, I thought of it. So I called Rich the next day, and I said, hey, Rich, this is what I see. What do you think? And he goes, well, actually, I'm right up the street. Let me go take a look at it. So he goes down, No one's home. He says, call and make a schedule. So we made the schedule, get there, and it's this old big farmhouse. It was a wholesaler that was selling it. And I knew right away that it was too big of a project for me. But Rich pulled me aside in the kitchen. He goes, hey, if I close on this, I'll give you a couple grand of closing for finding it for me.
Wow.
So I went home and I thought I was the greatest real estate bird dog wholesaler, you know, that ever was. And I told my wife, I'm like, I could do this all day long. So literally within 3 days, I found our first property on Craigslist for $18,000. Same thing, called Rich up and I said, hey, here's the address, here's the house. What do you think? He goes, well, let's go walk through it. We walked through. Booked the appointment. On the way there, I called the seller to reconfirm the appointment. Say, hey, it's Justin. I'll be there, you know, 45 minutes, whatever. He goes, okay, I'm not going to take a penny less than $17,500 for it. I'm like, well, okay, hey, you just saved me $500, right? So I go in, we walk through. Rich kind of gives me the gentleman's nod and shake the guy's hand, and I bought it. So I bought that one off Craigslist, and I had that $25,000, right?
Right.
We bought a house with some land about 10 years ago, and we wanted to build a barn on this property. Now, we could not agree, my wife and I could not agree on any aspect of this barn. The price, the design, the size, the orientation, windows, I mean, just literally nothing, even if we should even have a barn. I wanted it. She wasn't convinced that we needed it. And but we had the money saved up to do it, and it just, we weren't at peace about it. When this happened, it was like the logical step to make.
Wow.
And it was pretty awesome for her to be on the same page, for me to be on the same page, and just take that money that was like so important, that monkey claw money, right? That we just did not want to let go of, and just threw it right at this process. So I did that. I took the $25,000, paid $17,500 for it, and I opened a 0% Citibank credit card for 18 months. And I used the credit card for all the supplies, anything I could put on there, did. And I used my cash for utilities and paying laborers and stuff. And then I just worked there before work. You know, I worked there. I'd scoot it out for an hour, hour and a half at lunch. And then I'd go there after work. And I just kind of stuck.
So you did everything yourself, or did you? Did you hire someone?
Okay. No, most of it. You know, you don't have the time, you spend the money. You don't have the money, you spend the time. So it was all me. And, you know, I learned an awful lot. Rich was there with me. He taught me a lot. He gave me his whole Rolodex of contractors and carpenters. So that was a huge blessing to start off. And that is the benefit of having a great mentor in this business, whether you got to pay for it or whether you're lucky enough to have one. Like somebody who's blaze that trail before you.
Yeah.
You need to have access to somebody like that, because you'll kill yourself trying to figure this out by yourself.
So true. Okay, so when you decided to do this property, how long did it take you to get it done since you were doing it yourself?
So it kind of leads right into my second property. So bought this one in December. With cash, right? With cash. And right around February, and it was like pretty much a big gut job. In February, it was still dilapidated under heavy renovations. And Rich said, hey, you should go buy another one.
Wait a minute.
Exactly. So I'm like, okay, well, all right. I mean, what the heck do I know? But I'm going to trust you and I'm going to take your guidance for your interest in me and my business. So I called a local realtor who was pretty much just starting at the time. And that's a whole nother story, but it just goes to show the power of a network. And his name's Jake, and he's a rock star. He's the number one realtor in our area for like years in a row now.
Nice.
And he's a little bit younger than me, just a rock star realtor. So anyway, called him up and said, all right, Jake, hey, I'm looking for another, you know, fixer-upper. I mean, this was the Burr method way before it was cool, right?
Right.
So like, this is what I'm looking for, something I can fix up. And literally 4 blocks away around the corner, I found another one for it was like $39,000. I ended up getting it for 36, but again, the power of a network. Rich's attorney coincidentally happened to be my dad's attorney, and he has been very close to this business that both my dad and Rich worked at for like 30, 40 years.
Okay.
So he lent me $50,000. My attorney lent me $50,000, 7%, no points. I think it was interest only for 12 months in exchange for first lien positions on both these buildings. So I took that $50,000. I still had my credit card and I finished the first one, got that leased right around, I would say July or August. Mm-hmm. And then I finished the second one, got that leased right around September. And then he refinanced both of them with $75,000. So he refinanced both of them for $75,000 lien with first lien positions on both properties. Oh, and that was how I got my first two. So then what I did was that rolls right into my third one. I leveraged those two for my third one with the same attorney. I said, hey, I found a turnkey property. I was kind of burnt out after all the heavy lifting for those first two. So I found one that was basically turnkey. I said, hey, I found this one. Seller, it was on Craigslist, actually, for $50,000. And long story short, he gave me $50,000 to buy that property for exchanging lien positions on first lien position and second lien positions on all three. So now I had three properties. Awesome. I just had my $25,000. And I was able to pay off that credit card with that $75,000 refinance.
Okay, so you've mentioned the power of networking.
Yes.
Which is incredible.
100%. Yep.
Did he ask you, like, hey, what experience do you have in investing? Or, you know, the numbers or portfolio?
No, but he knew my father.
Okay.
And he knew I was working under Rich, my mentor, that
got it.
Randy was sold on. So he was very well secured. Like, these properties were certainly worth more than what his security was. So he was not concerned one bit. So I think there was an ode to my father of like, hey, let's just give your kid a shot and see what happens with the understanding of like, everything's secured. We have a control over this. And then I just never stopped and blew it out of the water. So, I mean, I had that private financing from the very beginning. And it took me a while to like realize, well, okay, now that I have that system figured out, how do I incorporate banks? How do I incorporate long-term lending, short-term lending? You know, some private lenders like long-term, some private lenders like short-term, and we can get into that later. So, but yeah, it was a very interesting start to this for
sure.
That's
incredible. Okay, so you're at your third property.
Yep.
And so you're like, don't stop. Let's keep going. So now you're on to your fourth.
Right. So my first three were all single-family homes. And I was like, well, okay, well, single, you know, one rent roll's good. Why don't I just get a duplex? So then my fourth one was a duplex. And that was the first, I paid $25,000 for it. It was an old storefront. And that was the first one that into it, I hired my first carpenter to do some drywall and some tiling. And it was like the biggest epiphany that I ever had. It's kind of like if anybody like went from a push lawnmower to a riding lawnmower or like shoveling snow to a snowblower. It was like, why didn't I do this earlier? Yeah. You know, it was that same feeling. And I was like, okay, lifestyle design, this is what I need to figure out. What do I need to do to keep doing this, hiring people to speed up my process?
Right.
And that's been one of the biggest things I've been committed to since I started, is figuring out and streamlining systems.
Right. Right. Okay. So at the beginning of our conversation, you had made a great quote about if you don't have the time, you spend the money. And if you don't have the money, you spend the time. Yep. Do you still agree with that now, considering that you just realized the power of leverage with getting other people?
100%.
Okay.
100%. Here's another thing too. And the point between acquisition and fully rented is so critical to your financial base that through scale, I've been able to afford this way of thinking, but it still relates to all the new people. Like, you almost need to have an open checkbook mindset.
Speak more on that.
You cannot skimp on saving time to source things, to look at things, to make decisions about this, to make decisions about that, to go shopping for supplies. Because every week that goes by is a week lost in rent. So if you're taking a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks to pick out, to shop around for the best deals, to interview people, to make decisions on paint colors, to do, to do Pinterest research on what you should do in this room, like, you just gotta fly. I'm serious. You just gotta fly. And by going to Lowe's every day. You get to learn the story. You get to learn the pro people. You get to cut deals. You know exactly what, and you'll, I mean, this is learned behavior. So like,
right.
It'll take time to establish these systems, but mm-hmm. I know when I go into a room, all right, we're going to redo this bathroom. I don't even basically need to take measurements. I can go to look, I can send my demo guys, right? Hey, mm-hmm. demo this on Wednesday, Thursday morning. I'm going to go to Lowe's, pick out all the stuff. I know exactly what I pick out because it's all the same stuff. It's all the same place. Right. I pick it up, pay for it, and leave. Sometimes I'll actually, when I was working my corporate job, I had the luxury of sitting behind a computer and I had saved order forms. So mm-hmm. I would buy it ahead of time. They would pull it and I would literally just pull up, throw up my truck and leave. That was an awesome luxury. I've kind of fallen out of practice on that, but that's a great system if you can afford to do that. But that takes knowledge. It takes, mm-hmm. you need to have the experience to get to that level. But that should be the goal. You should be able to fly. Everything gets the same color wall paint. Everything gets the same color trim paint, same color ceiling paint.
Yeah.
You just make these decisions and you run.
Yeah. Okay. So now you're on your duplex.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So tell us about this deal. How did you finance this one and go about making this one into
so,
a property?
So this was interesting. So this was $25,000. Mm-hmm. How did I finance this one? I think I opened up a line of credit at my local bank and it was like $20,000, $15,000, uh-huh. something like that. And between that and the cash I had, I liquidated the line of credit, paid for the property, renovated it, and then I did a cash out refinance, paid the whole thing off. Basically, nice. Burr method. I mean, before I even knew anything about that crap, it's exactly what I did. And towards the end of it, that's when I met my partner at the property management company that I own called Stonehouse Management Company. And he mm-hmm. was working at a local bank. And he bailed my mentor, Rich, out of a tricky situation. And Rich introduced us. He says, hey, you should go meet this guy. This kid, he really saved our ass on our project. So I went down, met him, and he owns a couple pieces of property. I own a couple pieces of property. And we just mm-hmm. became pretty good friends at that point. And he goes, hey, man, let's get you a bunch of lines of credit. I'm like, well, all right, man, what the heck do I know? So he gave me...
Wait a minute. So this partnership, this is so cool.
Yeah.
Why did you think you needed a partnership? Because, I mean, that's what I'm learning now. So I thought investors. Go ahead.
Right. So when I say partnership, fast forward 2 years. We own a property management company together. We don't own any properties together. And I would never advocate for anybody to have partners owning physical assets together. Our property management company owns this computer I'm sitting in front of, the laptop, and... I don't know, the paper shredder next to me. You know what I mean? Like,
I love it.
And a trailer and a utility trailer. So we really don't own anything together. My wife and I, we own all of our properties, but just us.
Okay.
So anyway, so he helped me get like $65,000 in lines of credit, personal, business, unsecured too. Oh, and I'm sorry. So two unsecured, one HELOC. So it was $75,000 between the HELOC and the personal and business unsecured lines of credit. Uh-huh. So now I sit back and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Now I can just do what I did on this little two unit mm-hmm. on bigger projects. So that allowed
question.
Me.
I got to ask this. I can't let this go by. Okay. $75,000 of unsecured credit. Mm-hmm. Was this with your business license or with your personal?
So it was like $50,000 in unsecured and I took a HELOC on my house through him for the other 25.
Okay. And did you use your business license? Is it on your business credit or is this your personal?
So he gave me a personal unsecured line of credit.
Wow.
And then he gave me a business unsecured line of credit, but he just like made Corritori Rentals, like some fictitious BS name for the application. And he pushed it mm-hmm. right through.
Nice.
So no licensing, no nothing. I don't have anything. It's not an LLC. It's not any of that stuff. So
and it goes back to the power of networking.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
Wow. Okay. I'm sorry. Keep going. This is so good. Okay. Keep going.
Yeah. No, this is cool. So, I mean, so again, one of the biggest things I relate to my success is mm-hmm. I really never changed my business model.
Okay.
Like I've just kept doing the same exact thing over and over and over and over again. You know, I see a lot of my friends, they'll get this shiny object syndrome and they'll just go start you know, restaurants or crypto or for, you know, food trucks or, you know, all this stuff, and they get splintered into 100 different directions. Like the only thing that I've changed is I have a couple Airbnbs. So instead of the traditional 12-month rentals, I have 10 short-term Airbnb stuff that we can get into later. But anyway, so getting back, so now I have the $75,000 line of credit. I have my original like $20,000 line of credit, and I have a credit card with a zero balance because I paid everything off. Right. My last one. So my rock star realtor calls me up. It was late. It was like 8 o'clock. He goes, "Hey man, I've got these two side-by-side sister flats, that I'm bringing to you first. And I don't know how you're going to do it, but you need to buy them." They wanted $99,000, 100 grand, $99,000. And they were in pretty bad condition. Mm-hmm. But they were right in my little network, right in my little stamp of area. And, you know, I was like, okay, well, I've got 75, I've got this, I can probably play with some money. I was doing quick, you know, on the spot game day math. And I said, okay, pitch this, $95,000. I'll give them 80 grand at closing. They take 15 grand and hold it for 6 months until I can do a cash out refinance. So nice. Long story short, they accepted that. Went into the closing, again, liquidated all of my lines of credit, had my zero balance credit card ready, and we hit all these units. So I can't remember now, but like, I think there was one vacancy. So we went in there, we renovated that, made that nice, got that rented, bumped it like $150 from where the old market rents were.
Yeah. Right.
And then, so we had four occupied there, but we did like glass block windows, a new front porch. We did windows, exterior doors, four in the front, four in the back. I did four new AC units, two new furnaces, like big bone style additions. So I was able to really bump the rents up pretty significantly. So the next house I bought was a single family house, again, right in a little area. And it was a house that had a sign for sale buried by a bunch of bushes. So I called and they wanted like $69,000 or $74,000 or something ridiculous. So I looked at the pictures. I could tell it was dated. Didn't even walk through it. It was on the MLS. I called Jake up and I'm like, listen, offer him $42,500 cash, no contingencies. He goes, okay, let me see. They called back and he goes, well, they can't accept that, but they countered at 59. I went, wow, okay, now we're talking. Now we kick the beehive and they want to get rid of this thing. I said, tell them 44.5 contingent upon a walkthrough and I can walk through tomorrow. He goes, okay, they're not going to accept 44.5, but they want you to do a walkthrough and get back to them. I said, okay, no problem. Walked through, came back. I said, I'm sticking to my 44.5, and they accepted it.
What?
$44,500. Beautiful brick place, big back patio, brick garage in the back. I mean, it was old. It needed a lot of like patching and paint. Like the humidity just like deteriorated the inside. So a lot of scraping, a lot of patching, painting. But we renovated the bathroom. It had a newer kitchen. I think we had to do like hot water tanks. I don't know. Just it wasn't certainly a couple windows. It wasn't a lot by any means. And I moved, and this is kind of the human side of this business. Those sister flats, I had a small family that were very easy to talk to that I became acquaintances with. And they were a husband, wife, and two kids. And the two kids were like an 11-year-old boy and a 13 or 14-year-old girl. So like they were sharing a room and it was just awful.
Oh, wow.
So I said, hey, I'll give you guys first dibs on this single family house that we're renovating. I'll give it to you under market. It was like $900. And they change your lives. They make me cookies every year. They nice. Always renew. Like there's never any issue and they love me and I love them and it's been a perfect thing. So that was amazing. So then I went back to these sister flats, renovated their apartment, like new carpets, new walls, like new kitchen, like the whole nine yards. And I was able to walk them through afterwards and they were in tears with how beautiful we made that apartment. So that was really awesome. And then like, we don't have to go through all my properties because they're all that style of burr and changes. Like burr and like the duplicatable process like that.
Okay. So as of today with your property management company, how many are you managing that you've purchased?
So I'm at like 130, something like that. My partner's at like 45, something along those lines. So we're like right around 170, give or take. And we use that folio and it's just, you know, it's really awesome. And how that kind of happened was he ended up getting a banking job down south in a town down south. And I always loved one of the properties that he, it's a big stone house building right on Millionaire's Row. And when he, I was always asking, hey, you should let me manage that. You should let me manage that. And finally, when he told me he was moving, he was taking a job down at down south, I said, hey, man, now's the time. Let me manage that thing. He goes, well, why don't we just do something together? And that's when we started Stonehouse.
Yeah.
So we both kind of knew, like, he was a family guy, I was a family guy, that we didn't really want to relearn the curve on property management software. So we just kind of ripped the Band-Aid off and went with AppFolio. And it was not cheap. The upfront cost wasn't cheap. The monthly costs aren't cheap. But it really allowed us to streamline so many systems, accounting, managing, leasing, rent collection. It was a huge pivot point for us.
Okay, this is so incredible. Okay, so when you were doing all these, buying all the properties, what was your why? Like, what was your ultimate goal? Because, I mean, for you to just say, yeah, I got up, I did this day in, day out, you know, working on the weekends, like, what were you going for? What was the ultimate goal?
So one of my biggest whys was my son started playing ice hockey at 4 years old, and he's very, very talented, very excellent balance, loves the game, like just everything. But I couldn't justify, one, the cost of travel hockey, and two, the time commitment of like leaving on Fridays and not coming home till Tuesdays. And I didn't want, you know, I had coaches asking me all the time, we'll give them rides, we'll take care of it. And I just like, I don't want to be that dad who sends his kid away and says, all right, bud, good luck this weekend. See you Monday or Tuesday. You know, like I just didn't want that. And that was one of the biggest motivators for me to work the way I worked.
Yeah. Nice. Nice.
And so, then obviously 100 units is the first,
exactly.
first goal. And then it's like, when do I leave my job? That's everybody's second goal. And now it's like, well, now what am I doing? And that's kind of the stage of life that I'm at. The dust is kind of settling and I get to kind of pick what I want to do and what I don't want to do and just keep my train on the tracks and having fun doing it. So,
how did you know that you were ready to quit your full-time job?
Well, cash flow. I mean, I had a personal balance, and if I could, you know, milk enough money out of my business to somewhat match that. And, you know, it, I probably should have done it a year ago. I mean, I had checked out of my job years ago, but like it had gotten to the point where it was like, okay, my real estate is affecting my job, and I know my employer sees it. And we just basically said, okay, what are we doing here? Let's have a heart to heart. And, you know, they laid me off, which is good. So I was able to collect unemployment, and they took care of me with benefits. And I mean, it was cool. I mean, like I said, my boss was awesome. I mean, we still talk. I mean, he was, I consider him a business mentor, and I could call him up at any point and we could talk. So it's, it was fine.
Okay.
It really was.
Okay. So do you plan to get more, or are you just fine at your 150?
No. I'll get more. I'm working on a big 17 unit now. No, so here, so here's, this is very interesting. So, I mean, I've basically bought something every month this whole year. Just not being active in the market, but just being present. And sometimes deals come and deals go, and you're just always doing something. So I'll back up real quick, but last year I ended 2019 at 43 units. And I ended 2020 at 104. So I more than doubled in a year, right in the middle of COVID.
And yeah, we're going to get into that too. Oh my gosh.
So, So anyway, I don't know why I thought that it was relevant for me to say that right there. What were we talking about? I apologize.
No, that was great. I mean, this you asked me
if I'm still buying. So
Right.
So I had all that explosive growth last year. And I kind of pulled into 2021, like with dust behind me. And I thought, okay, well, let me just focus on what can I do to transition out of my job? What does the portfolio need to look like? And then do that and kind of slow down a little bit to really streamline operations. And that's basically where I'm at now. I'm working on a couple big deals. I'm working on a big deal right now that I'm trying to land. I've been working on it since last November. And then everything else is kind of little odds and ends. I've got a big refinance I'm in the middle of. So just, you know, Tim Bratz, man, he's freaking incredible. I snagged a lunch with him a couple years back at a conference. He's like, dude, mm-hmm. listen, you need to be finding deals, raising capitals, and streamlining your systems. Those are the only three things you need to be focusing on every single day. And I'm like, damn, dude. So sure enough, yeah. I've got it written down right on my computer right in front of me. So
that's clarity right there.
Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to lean more towards that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you mentioned your business model, what exactly does your business model look like?
Chaos. Yeah. I mean, just, I've networked really well. Mm-hmm. I've secured short-term lenders, private lenders, and I've secured long-term private lenders.
Nice.
And I have excellent banking relationships. I have excellent realtor relationships. Yeah. That is my business. And everything that I do falls within that network of operations every single day.
That's clarity. I mean, that is just, it's not hard. You're just staying consistent and you just created
just
a system.
Just consistent. Yep. Yep. Nice. Yep. The less sexy the business, the better the business, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So what, have you had any pros? Well, I know you've explained the pros, but the cons with working with private investors, more so of like with these no issues?
No. I mean, the only hickey on my whole portfolio was mm-hmm. I ended up hooking up with somebody through the Bigger Pocket, or no, through, I won't even say it, not Bigger Pockets, but a different mentorships, a different mentorships private Facebook group, mm-hmm. and they were going to help me with a refinance, and I lost like $15,000 in like 6 months of my life. It was a nightmare. This was about 3 or 4 years ago. So that's
what
really
lessons?
The only...
What lessons did you learn from that?
You know, just to really only do business that you have connection with, that you can physically sit down and have a meeting with, that you can talk to people. Like, it was just ignorance, like not doing my own homework, and shame on me for pulling that cord. But I've learned, I've moved on. But all the lenders that I know now, that I deal with now, mm-hmm. they know me, they know my business. I'm mm-hmm. on the board of our local apartment association. I'm very active in our local RIA. I help everybody, talk to anybody who wants to talk. Mm-hmm. And they know that if I bring them a deal, they almost don't even care what the deal is. They just know that I'm a solid investor to give money to. So, but again, like I one of the things that I've learned and that I always mm-hmm. try to teach people is that, there's, when you reach a level of private money in real estate, there's a level of affluency of the person that you're dealing with, right? Like that person understands alternative investments like mm-hmm. real estate or commodities or businesses or something. So they really don't need to be sold on the business. They need to be sold on the person. And if you can sell them on you, then you have settled 90% of anybody's apprehension to doing business with you. And
absolutely.
I always tell people, even my kids, I'm like, don't ever be afraid to ask for what you want. Because even if they say no, now you're on their radar and they're going to watch. So watch what you put on social media. Watch what you do in the business world, in the marketplace, like who you are out in the world. Because people watch and they want to do business with people that they want to be affiliated with.
Yes.
And if you can make them money, if your deals can make them money as well as mm-hmm. making you money, then you just got to be the perfect customer. Reverse engineer mm-hmm. why somebody would want to do business with you and just solve that problem.
I love it. I love it. Do you have a rule of thumb that keeps you from over-leveraging?
No, I mean, you have to understand the deal.
Okay.
And you know what I mean? Like you just underwrite it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Income minus taxes, insurance, utilities, landscaping, CapEx, maintenance, vacancy. We have a local rental program that's $4 a month per unit. So that gets all in there. That equals your NOI, right?
Yeah.
NOI minus debt equals cash flow. As long as the deal fits that, then, you have to know your exit, though. That's the thing. So okay. To answer your question, sorry, I guess I had to think that through. To answer your question, you just have to fully understand your exit on every deal, right? And this will get into something that was really interesting since I've left my job. But like, I went into all of these deals knowing how I was going to get out of the deal into long-term debt. Like my first three, my attorney gave me long-term debt. So I didn't really need to deal with that. My fourth one, my now partner at the management company, who was the banker who helped me with the lines of credit, put me in touch with one of his lenders who dealt specifically with small multifamily real estate. So I had a meeting with him, gave him my taxes, my financials. He says, yeah, we should be able to do that in 6 to 8 months. So I went into that knowing how I was going to get out of it into long-term debt.
Right.
So that's important. That's how you... And then, I mean, it's just math. I mean, this is real estate's basically fifth grade math, right? You say, okay, the house is going to be worth $100,000. I have to be, you know, if it's a commercial loan, I got to be 70 to 75%. So ask your bank what they're lending on. And then you go, okay, minus my purchase price. That's how much money I have to fix this up. Can I fix this up for that much money? If the answer is yes, you do it. If the answer is no, you don't do it.
Right.
So it's, I'm not a very complicated guy. I just try to keep it simple, and it's worked out pretty consistently for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, this story, this is incredible. I just love to hear stories like this. Okay. So now we got to get into the financially lit segment. Okay. And this is where I love to get into the minds of real estate investors, because I think no one in the world thinks like we do. It's just incredibly just dope to me. Okay. And I'm just going to ask you a series of questions about money, and you tell me, you know, a quick answer, you can explain it. But what you mentioned, Rich Dad Poor Dad, in the beginning of our conversations, and pretty much every investor has said Rich Dad Poor Dad. But if you want to mention again, that's fine. But what book changed the financial game for you?
I would say 4-Hour Work Week would be the other one.
Yes, Tim Ferriss.
Yeah. That, because... So I always say Rich Dad, Poor Dad was the psychology, right? Mm-hmm. 4-Hour Work Week was the actual application systems aspect. So you were able to match up this business mindset with actual how to tangible do this.
Yes. And that is a great answer.
Yeah. And my brain was able to kind of just reverse engineer that and back it right into real estate. So I'm a project manager by trade as well. So that also helps.
I was about to say, like, wait a minute, you're going to have to write a book yourself on how to make this into real estate, because I've read it several times and I'm still trying to get it to mesh. So, that you need to write a book on that there.
Yeah.
Now I see you're a project manager. Yeah, because that it's like right here. And I'm like, OK, I still can't figure quite out. But for you to say that. OK, yeah. So it is hope that
there's hope. Absolutely. Sure thing.
Because the book is incredible. I'm like, how can I make this into real estate? Okay, but anyway. All right, so you mentioned COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about what it did for your business during that time?
So I knew early on that everybody was scared. Nobody was doing anything. Banks were frozen. And I was like, you know what? I'm going all in. And I called all of my private lenders. I called all of my realtors. My wholesalers, I'm still very active in our local RIA group. And I said, I'm in the market. I'm heavily engaged. Send me deals. And I just went all in. And, you know, it was a great year. Like I said, I went from 43 to 103, from beginning to the end. And it was, I don't even know how the heck I did that, but I did not stop. And it was just, we had so much fun. It was so much growth. And, that a lot of that is kudos to like AppFolio, where, you know, you just buy it, you set it up, you enter the tenants, and then you just copy and paste and you keep going. Like that transition was not hard one bit from one property to the next. A lot of them needed work. And I have, I have a crew of people that work with me, painters, carpenters, electricians, plumbers. And, you know, they made a lot of money last year too off me. And that was, it's all how the game works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what made you go into get the two Airbnbs?
So this may be a whole nother podcast.
Okay.
I'll try to keep it mile high. So my seventh property, and this is where I'm at now. One of my carpenters called me up and he said, hey, he works for like a local, mental health, rehab, placement agency. And he goes, hey, we have an old group home that we are going to sell. We're fixing it up to put on market. You should buy it. I said, okay, well, give me the address. Let me run through it. So he gave me the address, gave me the lockbox code. I ran through it, and it's just big, monster brick building, right? Two-story with a huge attic. Like, it would be a horrible traditional investment. And I was walking through, I'm like, oh, maybe $100,000, I don't know, $115,000, probably $150,000 for this thing. It's like right on one of the prime roads here in town. And long story short, I got it for $80,000. So I borrowed $100,000 private, short term on a 12-month balloon. We replaced all the windows, did some plumbing, did some wiring, simple stuff. And I tried to lease it commercially. Got one of those big signs, 3x5 signs, put it out front with my phone number, and I didn't get one lead off of it for like 3 or 4 months. And now I had borrowed a lot of money, so I could afford that time, that season time of just trying to advertise and advertise and advertise without any income. But we were approaching winter, and I was like, man, I gotta freaking do something. This thing's gonna eat me alive, right? Had a brand new boiler system in it, so that was nice. I don't even know. I think somebody from India inquired about one of my properties, and he goes, honestly, I just need a room cheap for a couple months. Do you have anything? I'm like, well, I got this monster thing in the middle of town. I can rent you one of the rooms there. So sure enough, I rented him an unfurnished room and an unfurnished monster house for $400 a month.
Wow.
So I had to, but I was paying electric, water, sewer, gas, internet, like snow plowing, the whole thing. So he had this thing, and I think we were in the middle of another huge renovation across town. So I kind of got distracted, and this was not a priority. I still had a ton of money left over. And about 2, 3, 4 months later, I'm like, I got to do something with this building. So I rented it to somebody else, one of his buddies who was here for 3 or 4 months at a local manufacturing contract job. So he gave the next round. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to figure this out. I got to do something with this building. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to advertise a little bit. So I got one more person. So now I've got three people, all foreigners, living in this big monster house, unfurnished rooms. It's basically six. It's now six rooms. It was five. And I'm like, okay, there may be something to this. Short term in the traditional rental world, but long term in the short term world, if that makes any sense. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna furnish one of the rooms. So I spent like $700 between Target for a desk and a local cheap furniture store, outfitted a room. So I rented it for $500. I'm like, okay, interesting. That's pretty good return, right?
Right.
So I'm like, okay, so I'm going to do the other one. So the first floor here is basically what I consider a private suite. There's a bathroom, there's a bedroom, and then there's like a private living room.
Okay.
So I furnished that, and I rented that for $650. And I was like, wow, okay, now we've got some cash flow happening at this place.
Wow.
So then one of the dudes moves out. I furnish his room, bump that rent up to $500. The other two dudes end up moving out, whatever. I furnished their rooms, bumped those up to $500. So there's some capital outlay in doing this. But now I've got five furnished rooms in this place that I'm leasing to contract people. Like there's a GE is here in town, and they do this like 3 months, 6 months, 8 months, 12 month leases, right? And then I got into like travel nurses and travel medical professionals. So I advertise on there, and I get a lot of those people. We're right around a couple hotels. And this business model worked out so well. We go to church right around the corner, and on the way home one day, big brick colonial on the corner went up for sale. And I was like, oh man, that would be another perfect like Airbnb short-term thing that I'm doing at my building. So went in, long story short, bought that for $80,000, rented that out. Now that's four rooms, two private suites, two bedrooms that share a bath, all furnished. And I have that all automated. I have four long-term guests there. So now I've got these two buildings. They're 9 units total, right? And I'm like, I love this. And here's another thing too. And this is where we could really stem off on a whole new podcast.
Okay.
All of my 9 units here are on Airbnb. I do not provide linens, toiletries, or pillows. So I have eliminated 100% yes. of the laundry aspect to my business. And the way I advertise that, I put mm-hmm. right on Airbnb, I do not provide linens, toilet, toiletries, pillows. Now, my mm-hmm. prices are substantially lower because of that.
Right.
And when people send me inquiries, I always say, thank you for the inquiry. These dates, I never do instant book because I have to make sure that people are fully aware of this. Hey, thank you for the inquiry. These dates work for me. I always like to reconfirm my ad that we do not provide linens, toiletries, and pillows. If this works, let me know and I'll gladly accept the reservation. And I have not had one person question it. And I say, nice. And I say, you will arrive to a clean and sealed full-size bed, queen-size bed, whatever the yeah. room is.
Nice.
And it's knockout. And it's amazing. Nice. Amazing. Because I'm not attracting the weekend warrior mm-hmm. traveler. I'm attracting right. somebody who they're very, very budget sensitive. Right. They don't care about cute artwork. They don't care about fancy things. They need a place that they can go to, lock, mm-hmm. have internet, and sleep.
Right.
And I am right. priced accordingly, and I am booked consistently.
That is so great. So, you found a market.
I'll fast forward to where I'm. So I'll fast forward a little bit and how this uh-huh. really kind of made it even better. The building that I'm at now, my office, that mm-hmm. first floor suite that I was telling you about with the bathroom, yeah. the bedroom, and the living room. There's a door in the middle. I closed, locked the door, and I made the living room our private office. So nice. Now my stone house, now that I'm out of my job, this mm-hmm. building is right in the middle of our operation, our day-to-day operation. So I use this office. My property manager uses this office. Our maintenance mm-hmm. people come in here, use the office. We have a big network printer, dual monitors, like all of our paperwork. We have a big screen. I'll show you real quick
nice.
Of all the vacancies and all the stuff that, you know, my property manager and I, we work on every single day.
Yeah.
And it's just become a tremendous asset for us. Here nice. In the middle of our operation. So wow. just like, and now I've got 5 Airbnbs mm-hmm. and a free office supporting this whole building. And it's amazing. It's just leverage, right? Leverage, leverage, leverage.
Leverage. That's yep. amazing.
So, on piggybacking this Airbnb thing, mm-hmm. I bought a 2-unit building right around the corner mm-hmm. from where I'm at now, directly across from one of the hospitals.
Okay.
And I bought it with the intention of this is going to be a perfect Airbnb short-term rental. Well,
okay.
one of my friend's parents were moving back. They needed a place to live. I rented it to them. And they just got out of there. I had to evict them. That's a different story. But I took the apartment back and we did a little bit of renovations, but we mm-hmm. painted the whole thing, cleaned the whole thing, furnished the whole thing. And now that's my first Airbnb that I can host up to 3 people.
Nice.
So all these other ones that I own are singles mm-hmm. only. I don't allow guests, no pets, no smoking, singles only, mm-hmm. right? But I kept having people and realtors calling me, hey, I've got a small family that needs a 2-bedroom for a month. Their contract fell through. They need a place, whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
So these rooms that I was getting between $575 and $600 a month for, mm-hmm. I'm now getting, $350 a week for this little 2-bedroom apartment.
Wow.
And I don't provide linens, toiletries, or pillows. It's all contract. You know what I mean? Like, it's yeah. just awesome. And I have, like, it's funny because I was in, we were at Myrtle Beach on a family vacation, and I got a phone call from one of the realtors I know, and he goes, hey, Justin, just curious if you could house this small family. He's moving up here, but the house that they were going to buy fell through. They need a place next Saturday, which is like, okay. like 10 days away. I'm like, and I had this 2-unit under renovations, and I was going to do it, but I didn't have a time frame under my belt. I said, yep. You can bank on it. It'll be done by Saturday. So banged all that out. We did new concrete work. We did windows. We did you know painting. We furnished the whole thing. I mean, it was chaos up until the point of it. But for $350 a week, mm-hmm. when I'm, you know, that's $1,400 a month when I'm getting $400 or I'm sorry, $575 a month on some of these other ones, that's all the money in the world. And I think I'm low. I think I can bump that even more. So he just called me 2 days ago and he said, hey, I've got another person whose contract fell through, but I think the timing's going to work out perfectly for when mm-hmm. Alan leaves, they can take that place. Would you be okay with that? I'm like, dude,
you're tapping into a market.
Full rain. So, yeah.
This is a market that no one is touching.
I talk this business model up all the time.
Man, that is good.
Yeah.
And this goes back to what you said about this is about networking, because they know you and you're the go-to person to solve this problem for
housing.
Problem
solver. Yep, exactly. You have to be the problem solver.
Yep. I like that. I like that. And it's all simple. Like, you have really made this completely simple.
I mean, it hasn't been simple figuring it out, but you can see where I haven't really left my lane. Like, everything is very complementary of one another.
Exactly. You know what
I mean? I'm not recreating anything that's too outlandish. Now, if I was doing short-term rentals and I had to figure out the laundry aspect of the business, that adds a whole nother element that now you are completely dependent upon either you going there every 2 or 3 days, cleaning crews going there every 2 or 3 days, you know, repairing things promptly. Like, that's a different business. There's a lot of money to be made there, but it is a different business entirely, for sure.
Right. Okay, so let's get back to the financially lit.
Okay.
What money lesson have you learned that you didn't learn in school?
I mean, my dad, he's a bookkeeper by trade, and I even wrote this on my blog. It's the two bank account budget system, right? First of all, I think every kid in every high school should teach personal finance and tax preparation,
right? I agree.
That goes without saying. But the two banking systems for personal finance that my father taught me when I was 15, 16 years old that I still use today, you have an Excel spreadsheet, and you have all of your personal finances, or all your expenses, right? That equals a total. When I was working W-2, we could split our direct deposit. So I split my direct deposit for that account to have deposited every month, which totaled every month, that amount of money. So if my expenses were $3,000 a month, sorry, did you hear that? My goodness. $3,000 a month, my direct deposit would deposit $3,000 a month into that account. Then anything left over would go into what my wife and I had our debit cards to. So I knew that I couldn't touch a dime out of that account without accounting for it somewhere. And it's just a personal budget that I was loyal and committed to for that system. And then, like, our debit cards, we just used for, you know, food, gas, clothing, whatever we had to do. That wasn't really, like, loosely budgeted things. But as long as our hard bills were covered, everything else we just had to live with, you know. And hey, hon, hey, we only have $50 to last us until Friday. Let's be careful. Let's slow down a little bit. You know, like, we had those conversations all the time. So I would say that's the biggest lesson that I didn't learn in school, and I learned it from my dad.
Okay. So using the two banking system, is that how you got to your $25,000? Did you use that to get there?
I mean, that was all part of it. Yeah, but it's not like, I mean, when I tell you I don't know how I did it, I'm not lying. Like, my wife and I, we have no idea how we did it. We don't know how we bought our current house that we're in. We don't know how we saved that $25,000. We don't know how we paid for our wedding. Like, just like, how does stuff like that happen? Like, it's just, it's so abstract in, you know, a normal paycheck society that, so just literally tax returns and, you know, farting around with, my, I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything illegal, unfortunately, because it would have been a heck of a lot easier to make a lot of money doing, but.
Wow. Okay, so what is
back, your... I'll tell you one more quick... you one more quick story. I was telling you about how I was always doing funny things for money. One day at work, this is before I started real estate investing, I jumped on Craigslist, and I found under heavy equipment an interstate asphalt roller, like one of those 30 feet, with the two big steel cylinders that you see on the interstates. And the guy wanted $1,200 for it. My first thought was, oh, geez, that's heavy. I wonder how much I could scrap that for. So I called the scrapyard. I said, this is what I got. I did a little bit of research online, found out how much it was. And long story short, I paid the guy $1,000. I made arrangements for a wrecking company to go out, tow it, and load it on their truck, take it right to the scrapyard. And I walked away with like $1,200.
Nice.
And I was like, man, that's awesome. So I was always doing stupid things like that.
Yeah.
So always flipping stuff and eBay. Yeah. And so, but I don't think I did anything that equaled $25,000. I think I was just we were a squirrel to some degree of just putting money away. So,
okay. So Justin, what is your ultimate goal?
I am in the process of trying to figure that out myself, to be honest with you. Okay. Because I've checked those first two boxes. Now it's, okay, what's the why? You know, make sure our needs are met. Mm-hmm. And then what's the next focus? Lifestyle design to some degree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Travel. So I mean, even though you've... Still, I mean, they're not young, but they're, you know...
Yeah. So now that you've accomplished all this with like 150 properties and you're buying more, do you feel like your lifestyle has like changed or is it still the same? Because I mean, I'm seeing you and you're just like a regular guy.
I'm not working a job anymore. Yeah, I'm not working a job anymore. So I can, you know, I go to lunch with my fellow investors and, you know, like people, you know, up and comers are always asking me to lunch. You know, I've got a small coaching program that I run. You know, I love helping people and, you know, I like streamlining my processes. I still like doing cool projects with my real estate and rehabs. And, you know, we just took a building that we're working on and we stripped it down from a single utility service building and we split the utilities entirely. So that's going to, you know, improving efficiencies and systems. So I love just that creative aspect of what real estate can do for you. And once you get into a system of like always working in your business, everything that you do that you think is kicking that can further down the street and improving your own business.
Nice.
And it's a very efficient way of growing a business.
I agree with that. I agree with that. Okay. So how can we find you?
So Facebook's probably the easiest way to do it. You know, I've got a personal page. I've got a business page, you know, Justin Curatore at Stonehouse Management Company. Just look me up there. You can see my coaching program. You can send me instant messages. You know, I'm not on Instagram. I do have a page, but I'm not very active there. I probably should. But you know, I'm very active in a lot of the different communities. You know, that bird group that you and I connected on, you know, I'm active there. Our local RIA and our local Facebook groups I'm active on, but you know, just send me a Facebook message and I can get back to you. So.
Awesome. Well, I thank you for being on the podcast.
Hey, no problem. This was a blast. Yeah, thanks for reaching out. I'm glad we did this. Hopefully that added some value and some direction and some nuggets to your people. So
it definitely did. Okay, so answer this last question or finish this statement for me. My life in real estate is.
My life in real estate is fulfilling.
I like that.
Right? I think that's
yeah.
That's the goal, right? What brings you fulfillment? You're never going to be void of problems, right? You're always going to have issues to deal with.
Yeah.
What problems do you want and does that bring you fulfillment? I think that's the goal.
I like that. Thank you for being a light. This was really a great conversation. To learn more about Justin, just go to the website lightinguprealestate.com. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a review, subscribe, or share with a friend. That's all for now. Stay safe, stay sane, and stay lit.